much in the arms of Glenn.
And John.
Woo! And welcome to the AR 500 Armor Studio, another pre-recorded show. We apologize for this show.
Yeah, I mean, it happens, though.
Here's why we're apologizing for the show.
Because it's two pre-recorded shows back to back.
Two pre-recorded shows in a row, man. I hate doing two pre-recorded shows in a row.
It's the holiday season. People are busy.
I know. Well, we did the pre-recorded show last week because we were out of town. And then this week, we weren't supposed to do a pre-recorded show, but then we ended up having to do some training stuff. So
yeah.
So now we are, what is it?
Future, past, and present.
There you go.
How do you not get that? Future, past, present.
It's like one of those things my brain just doesn't remember.
Yeah, you're right.
Anyways.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So thanks to all of our patrons. We appreciate your support. We appreciate you guys being involved with our organization and being involved with the show. Remember to get the advantages of being a patron, all right? Check out the blog. Check out the show reviews. Get the extra show every month, all right? If there's, you know, competition or not competitions, but what do we call them? Contests or anything like that. They're open only to patrons. And your show ideas is how we make our shows, really. So, you know, every now and then we come across a show we just want to do. But
yeah,
other than that, it's like, dude, get on it.
You're right.
All right. So Merry Christmas to everybody.
Yeah.
Because Christmas is in 2 days.
You're right.
From the show.
Yep.
I don't want to get from the show. From the time you're hearing our voice coming out of your speakers, it's 2 days from now. If it's already been Christmas, well, Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
If it's yet to be Christmas, also Merry Christmas.
Oh, God.
And a Happy New Year. But we'll be live on the 30th.
Yes, we will.
Because it's our Rowdy Roundtable. So Rowdy Roundtable coming up on the 30th, last show of the year. So we'll definitely be live on that. But the 23rd, yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah,
so
it happens.
All right. Man, we have some fucking crazy shit going on right now in our country. We cannot not talk about the impeachment.
Dude, I was wondering if you were going to talk about that.
I saw
a meme the other day that sums up this entire the entire past 4 years perfectly.
Yeah. Okay.
Trump's going to win in 2020.
That's an obvious given, yeah.
The Democrats are still trying to win 2016.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Right?
That makes so much sense.
Well, it's like I saw that and I was like,
you have a Democratic House, which is literally the whole reason, of course, that he gets impeached at the House level.
Yeah. Right? For not doing anything that's actually an impeachable
abuse
offense
of power is what they're calling it, with no actual evidence, no witnesses that have any kind of credibility, a lot of hearsay and once upon a times. And here's the thing, man. It's to the point where it's all flushing down the toilet.
Well,
right
now you've got another talking point. As Adam Schiff said the other day, that Trump is now trying to hijack the 2020 election. That's why he reached out to Ukraine. So he's jumping on a totally new talking point that nobody ever mentioned prior to whenever.
Now they're just coming up with some new
shit. Well, they already were coming up with. Now they're just coming up with more shit.
Like, they don't really want Trump. And look, I'm not the largest Trump fan.
No, I don't support a lot of what he's done.
I don't.
I wasn't until this shit all happened. And then I was like, wow, this is really driving me to want to see people cry.
So, I'm not really a fan of any politicians, right? Yeah. So I can't really care that much. But my point is, it's not really about taking down Trump.
You have half the system that is completely ignoring
we talk about the toaster is broken, right? The whole due process bullshit that we talk about forever. This is a perfect example of how broken the toaster is the concept of due process in our current government system is a fucking shit show. I mean, look at the Kavanaugh situation. Look at Trump's situation. Look at all and what's happening to all of these politicians that are making all these false accusations.
Nothing
is happening.
Nothing.
They're getting more money. They're getting reelected.
They should fucking go to jail.
No, they should be hung.
Yeah.
Public hangings aren't a bad idea.
Bring them back.
And now you have
all this. Because the death penalty is only effective if it's carried out swiftly and equitably. And the death penalty has done neither of those things.
Well, when you have
if you're gonna do it. You got to do it.
The toaster is broken, is what you're saying.
When you have the same party accusing somebody of doing something that one of their party leaders, an ex-vice president, is recorded on tape saying on stage and is laughing about withholding $1 billion in funds until a prosecutor was fired.
Yeah, like they're, but that's all right.
You know, that's cool because he's a Democrat. Yeah. You can get away with it.
All of this stuff is so horrible. All these people are so horrible. The whole system is so screwed up, and yet we do nothing. Now, part of that is because the alternative is still not yet worse, right? The lights still come on and the toilets still flush. And so as long as that's going to continue to happen, we got Christmas coming up. People are super wrapped up in the holidays, right? Everyone's trying to figure out what bullshit fucking piece of garbage they need to buy their kid to make them not happy, or whatever they need to buy their spouse or their loved ones so that they also won't be happy with this material possession. Everyone's so focused on that shit that they can't even focus on this. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole idea of what's going on in our society, it's just broken. So at this point, you just sit back and you just laugh as you watch it burn. I mean, it's like literally watching something catch fire and derail. You're just like, this is happening regardless of what I do.
Literally watching a train wreck.
It's happening regardless of what we do. Because what's going to happen? All right?
Nothing.
Everyone's like, would you take back the government? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're
not going to do anything. There are literally people getting interviewed on the news that are like, I've got a gun that says that Trump's not getting impeached.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Why aren't you outside Congress right now protesting?
Yeah, so what are you doing?
What are you doing? You're just fucking standing around watching
going to the Smithsonian. We're going to talk about doing something without actually doing something. We're going to sign petitions online from the comfort of our own home. And look, I'm not accepting myself from this group or exempting myself from this group. Right? I'm just saying, like, the alternative is still not worse. For me to want to go out and really fight for liberty, understand what I'm risking.
Everything.
Now, not jumping on the impeachment bandwagon of necessarily like protesting and resisting. What about Virginia?
I applaud the citizens of Virginia for doing what they're doing, but, and hopefully it's enough. Hopefully it doesn't come to bloodshed in that situation. But if it does, hopefully the people that are banging their drums are willing to do what they say they're willing to do. Right?
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be too many people that
I think what you're gonna actually see is the system will work, because the governor, elected by the people, has decided to make all of these changes that none of the fucking people support.
But they're saying that the people do support it because they elected him to do just that. What he's saying.
Okay. You could say it that way, and to a degree, it's not wrong. But they supported him based on a very narrow picture.
Yeah.
Well, now, public opinion has obviously swayed on this particular movement, right? I mean, you've got
86 all but counties.
One or two of the counties are now 2A sanctuaries. You've got cities doing it. Tazewell County has actually gone about the Virginia state constitution in establishing their own militia to prevent the state government from overstepping its boundaries in their county.
Sounds like a natty guard situation to me.
I want to see what they'll do if he does call the National Guard, because a lot of people are saying they'll fight him.
I
don't want to see Americans get killed by other Americans, don't get me wrong.
So my wife and I were actually discussing this, and it's gonna be a real interesting situation, because in the military and the National Guard, there's a small group of people that will follow their orders.
Right? Yeah.
They're just fucking dumb or whatever, right? They will follow their orders. But then on your way there, you really got to think about what you're doing, right? I'm going to Jim's house. Jim is an upstanding member of the community.
You gotta stop right there, though. See, that's the problem with calling in National Guard. That's the problem with calling in outside security organizations, which is why those organizations exist. Mm-hmm. That's the problem with even calling in law enforcement. They don't really know the members of their community, and they don't get that much information. It's not like a SWAT team gets told, hey, this is where you're going.
No, I understand.
They just go, like, you're going to go to this address, and they're told this person is XYZ, and right, that makes it bad enough in their mind to go like, oh, they're doing XYZ. You think everybody at freaking Waco or Ruby Ridge actually knew what the fuck was actually going on. No, they were there just doing their jobs because they were fed bullshit information. So how they're going to use potentially good people in uniform services and mercenary basically services, right? Private security companies. How they're going to use that against the American people, in my opinion, right? Just having, I don't know, watched for the last 20 years about what's going on in other countries, like how they're going to use this, these organizations, is they're going to get them so spun up on shit that when the guys roll in, they are there to do the work. And it doesn't matter if shit starts death spiraling. Think about a freaking military op, right? Everybody did a fucking op somewhere in some fucking part of the world where shit spiraled out of fucking control. And nobody there really stopped and was like, whoa, 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 everybody just calm down, cease fire and relax, and let's logically process what's going on here. No. Everyone instead was like, I will not let the dude next to me, this uniformed guy next to me, get fucking smoked regardless of what happens next. No matter what happens, we're going to all come out of this alive. Even if afterwards, even if your actual intel was bullshit and afterwards you were like, oh, fuck, we might have broke the ROE or whatever. Like,
or a Geneva Convention.
Or the Hague Convention or Geneva Convention or any of the other conventions, right? Even if that kind of shit happens, still after the fact, people go like, well, at least we're all alive. I mean, when you read about SWAT cops raiding okra farms and smashing in grandma's face and throwing flashbangs into baby cribs and killing baby deer on farms because they're trying to, you know, capture an illegal wild animal. And it, like, when you read these kinds of stories, you're like, this is insane. This is insane. Who the fuck is doing this? Like, I know a lot of cops, and I can't say that any of the ones that I know personally would do that shit.
Right.
Logically.
Yeah.
Meaning, if you and I were sitting here right now and I asked them and they were also sitting here and I said, would you do this? They would, of course, say, no, I wouldn't
That's
do that.
That's insane.
But get them spun up on a fucking call. Get when you put – we didn't get dressed up for nothing, right? Get them out there on a call with all their gear on, around all their boys. Tell them they're going here to handle whatever the hell it is you need to do to get them spun up on some shit, right? Then they show up to the call. They're already spun up. They're already ready. They're ready to do their job. They're excited to do their job. That's why they're on the job, right? And now they're there to do the work, whatever that work may be. And now they get out there and they're halfway through the situation and they've shot three dogs and stomped a kid and everything else and shit's spiraling out of control. It rarely, rarely happens where somebody within that small unit, forget about the, you know, leadership, that's, things are happening too quickly for them to make quick decisions. So it's like,
you're right.
Now the guys on the ground are just like, oh shit, and now they're just doing everything they can to get out of there. People are also making the false assumption that these guys know what the fuck they're doing in the first place.
Most military and police do not train.
They don't really understand.
Yeah.
They haven't, what they have been through is the training that was provided to them by their agency or by their organization. And that can be a very politically driven and politically motivated style of training.
Right.
They're not necessarily always trained in the things that we would think they ought to be trained in. Hell, we train more civilians in, you know, in through independence training in better tactics and concepts than the majority of law enforcement or military are ever going to get.
Yeah.
And so I think the reality is, let me say it like this. I've asked a lot of law enforcement officers that I know personally, men and women that I trust with my life, right? If we were in a situation where it was me and them and we needed to go do something serious, I would trust them to do the right thing. As a uniformed police officer, they work for a government I don't particularly trust, right? And so because of that, when they are on the job, there's a different mentality that goes along with that. I'm not saying that they suddenly become constitution-stomping jackboot thugs. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that when they're on the job,
they have a job.
Their ROE is very different, and their job is still their job, and that's still their paycheck. And with all that being said, I've asked a lot of these people, would you do door-to-door gun confiscations. I personally don't think that's a very big reality.
No.
But would you go do door-to-door confiscations? Just to ask them. Let's say tomorrow you go into work, they've passed some last-minute freaking rule. Would you freaking do it? And they all say no. But do you know why they say no?
Because they're alone.
Because it's too dangerous. That's their take. Their take isn't, for the most part. Now, I know some of the ones, and I'm painting everyone with a broad stroke here. I know some police officers, of course, and there's people listening right now. They're like, oh, I'm a police officer, and I wouldn't do it because I believe in the Second Amendment of the Constitution. That's cool, man, or lady. That's awesome.
So quit your job.
No. Talk to the other people on your squad.
Yeah.
See how they feel. Talk to the other people in your department and see if they feel like you feel. My guess is, unless you work in some tiny little rural county something, they probably don't, because most cops, most soldiers, Marines, sailors, airmen are not wearing that uniform because they're red-blooded, patriotic, freedom-loving libertarians. Mm-mm. They're wearing that uniform because it's a good, steady job, or it gives them an opportunity to use certain skill sets they've acquired, or they want to acquire certain skill sets, or they're there for college money, or they're there for advancement into other positions. Some guys start as a patrol officer because they eventually want to get out of that. They want to get into crime scene stuff. They want to get into detective work. They want to get away from that kind of stuff. Some guys are there because they're shooters and they want to stay shooters. So they're, you know, trying to work into a SWAT team organization or a, you know, NARC unit or something, or a cover unit or something like that. And that's all good stuff, right? And we really do, you know, respect and truly support those. We don't support them with a fucking yellow ribbon either. Right, we do a lot of training for these folks out of our pocket. All right, we're not fucking around when we say we support these guys. That being said, we also understand the reality of what could be expected of them to do the job. And I'm not necessarily saying that I'm that different from them. You put me between taking care, paying for, providing for my family, you put me between that and something else, I'm definitely going to go with the taking care of my family bit.
You know? To a point.
To a point. Always to a point, but everyone's to a point
is going to be different. Everybody's line is different.
And so we have to be really careful when we go, like, we assume or we accept, oh, well, all cops are going to be the same or all. And it's interesting to me when people go, like, I don't trust the government, thin blue line. And you're like, what the fuck did you just say?
Literally contradicts itself.
You literally just contradicted yourself. And this is understanding that I have law enforcement friends and friends in law enforcement that I love. Absolutely and truly, as a human being, I love them. And even with that being said, I still understand they work for the government.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In the end, that is their job. Some of them are better than others, but that's why I think if they deploy National Guard or whatever, I don't think people are going to get... People think like, oh, they're going to deploy cops and cops are going to say no, or they're going to deploy National Guard, all the National Guard's going to say no. I don't think that's going to happen.
No, not everybody.
I think it's going to be more people that are willing to do it than people think.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because you have a lot of folks who go like, well, of course I want my guns. But how many guys do you know? How many gals do you know? How many freedom-loving Second Amendment veterans, military, freaking law enforcement, whatever, do you know that are all like, yeah, 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 I'm all for guns. But I mean, do you really need X? Right?
And I know a couple of them.
I know a lot of guys from our world who you know, were like, fucking stupid bump stocks, who cares? I know a lot of people from our world who was like, I don't care. I don't really use 30-round magazines. You know, a lot of veterans, they don't shoot anymore. They don't give a shit.
Yeah.
They don't fucking care.
Yeah, a lot of veterans get out and fucking don't
never
touch
a gun again for any number of reasons.
Yeah.
A lot of it because it wasn't even part of their job. You know, and again, like, people have this idea of military and law enforcement service where it's like all these like heroic red-blooded patriots are the only people serving in uniform. That is not true.
No.
It's not true. There's plenty of people who go through those both of those jobs and hardly even touch firearms. And they don't care outside off of work, dude. I knew dudes in high-level freaking hitter units in the military that did not shoot off the job. They didn't even own firearms off the job. They didn't care. It wasn't part of their lifestyle. They did a job. They enjoyed their job. Their job included firearms. They were lethal motherfuckers. There's no doubt about that. But they did not care about firearms off the job.
Nope.
It's the same thing with cops.
Yeah.
I think people would be sad at how many people would show up. And I know there's plenty who wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not plenty. There's a lot who wouldn't.
Handful.
But there's plenty who, when they put that pension on the line, when they put that paycheck on the line, when they put the ability to provide for your family on the line, and most importantly, they misinform you about what you're going to do. I mean, Jesus Christ, has that happened in the last 18 years? Mm-hmm. Have units been a little misinformed about what they were supposed to be doing in an AO?
No, never.
Right? And then afterwards, you got guys coming out with PTSD because they did shit that they didn't know they were supposed to be fucking doing, or they find out after the fact that they did some things that they didn't necessarily agree with. But in the moment, when you're only given 10% of the facts, mm-hmm. not 90% of the facts, or 100% of the facts, 90% of the facts are being left out. You're told to go to XYZ address because this violent guy is a pedophile who threatened his family to shoot them, who threatened to shoot his wife or his kids.
Turns out it was the wrong fucking house.
Maybe it was the wrong house.
That happened twice when I was in North Carolina in 1 year.
Dude, it happens nationally regularly.
Yeah.
Because there's...
I'd say at least once a month.
Dude, it happens. You know what I mean? For any number of logistical reasons, it happens. Right? From start to finish, it's a game of telephone. Yep. Someone's passing along information, he's passing along information, he's passing along information, and the next thing you know, one number gets changed in the address, and you're at a different place.
Yep.
You know, and now you're kicking in the door of someone who doesn't even freaking deserve it. And now it's your house. They're supposed to be at your neighbor's house, but it's your house. And you hear no knock action happening in your fucking door. What are you going to do? You're
going to
do what that dude down at freaking Marana did. Remember that Marine Corps veteran worked at the mines, got fucking killed by a SWAT team because he thinks that the freaking cartel or whatever is kicking mm-hmm. in his door. He's a Hispanic dude and his brother's all tied up in this shit, but he's a pretty clean dude. He's Marine Corps veteran, and not that that means he's a good dude necessarily, but I'm saying
he goes to his bedroom, gets his rifle, starts shooting, and ends up dead.
But he doesn't even start shooting, right?
Yeah, he did.
No, he did not. No, when they fucking smoked him, his weapon was on safe. It was really, really important because it was an evidence photo of his weapon laying on the ground on safe. He did not start shooting. What happened was the point man on the stack had an ND going through the door because everybody was Me Too trying to get through the fucking door, and they pushed him into the door frame, and he shot his fucking carbine because he was at a low ready because he didn't fucking ever pay attention in tactics school, and he fucking bumped up against the door frame and discharged a fucking round into the door frame, and then everybody thought that they were getting shot at, so they fired like 70-something rounds at this fucking guy, shot the fuck out of him, right? Then the dude, the fucking number six man or whatever, the security element's got a pistol. He fucking Me Too's literally on fucking video. He puts his pistol over everyone's head and starts shooting through the doorway. Total Me Too shooting. No one actually even enters. Then they back out after filling this goddamn place full of lead. They all back out, get the freaking robot, send the robot in there. The dude's still alive. His family, his wife, and I can't remember if it was one or two kids, is locked in the closet. He put him in the closet.
Yeah.
To try to keep him safe and had a pretty good position. Meanwhile, he's laying there, weapon on safe, AR-15, weapon on safe, laying on the ground next to him. And they've got him alive and they don't put medics in there. They take their time securing the scene with their little video robot, making sure he dies. Then they pull the robot out. Then they send in the team, find his family, pull them out. Now the dude's dead, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty hard to freaking testify against some bullshit if you're dead, yeah?
Yeah.
Now you tell me that each one of those cops was some horrible, terrible, jackbooted thug. Absolutely not.
No.
They absolutely were not. There was, that stack was full of some good-hearted people, some good men who were part of a bad fucking situation. Mm-hmm. And why were they there? Because of bad intel. And why did they start shooting? Because of bad ROE and bad understanding and bad fucking training.
Bad situational awareness.
And now it all just compounds and starts wildly spooling out of control. But hey, all the cops left alive, and that's what I'm talking about, right? At the end of the day, that's their freaking goal. And then they go in and try to vilify the guy because he had one of those, he had body armor under his bed. Oh, gee.
Oh, God.
We're literally sitting in a freaking manufacturing plant for body armor.
Don't go to my house.
Who sells private body armor to private citizens. Like, yeah, dude, body armor is a normal thing.
Four fucking kids. I got body armor in all of my backpacks.
Oh, yeah, like, dude. It's everywhere. I got body armor everywhere, right? And then he had one of those like touristy Border Patrol hats, like the ones you get that are total touristy.
Like the old man Afghanistan hat?
Yeah, exactly. It's not like a real freaking... And then they were like, see, he was part of these hit squads that was going around doing cartel rips and whatever. They were pretending to be Border Patrol agents, blah, blah, blah. It's like, nah, dude, you can't pin that on this dude.
Yeah.
Right? And then in the end, it all just kind of goes away.
Yeah.
Nobody got fired.
Nobody got suspended.
People, well, they did have some administrative personnel changes for sure. But to my knowledge, and I haven't looked recently, I want to say there was some accusations and potentially some charges trying to get filed civilly or whatever, but I don't remember the outcome. And honestly, it doesn't matter because the outcome wasn't severe enough because we didn't hear about it. If it would have been severe enough, if it would have been good enough, we would have heard about it. Mm-hmm. Someone's head should have rolled for that. Understand that a county government in the state of Arizona murdered one of our citizens and mm-hmm. we drank coffee while we read the fucking story. You know what I mean? That's the problem with all the shit that's going on. I am not exempting myself from being a fucking lazy in this situation.
Yeah, I don't think any of us can.
But it's like, what are we going to do about it? What can we do about it? What should we do for Virginia? I'll tell you what we ought to do. We all ought to fucking stand up collectively, get our shit, and go to fucking Virginia. Because Virginia is a state in the 50 states that make up our beautiful fucking country here, mm-hmm. right? And we all in this room and so many of our friends and neighbors.
I'm from Virginia. That's where I was born. I still have family in Virginia.
And that's like, again, dude, we all here swore an oath to defend and uphold the Constitution of the United States. Right? The Constitution of the United States is being shit on. Daily. Totally shit on. This impeachment fucking debacle, this Virginia bullshit, California's bullshit, all the stuff we're dealing with being shit on. Constantly.
Everywhere.
New York, New Jersey, Hawaii. New York,
New Jersey, Maryland.
Hawaii.
Fucking.
Here's why it's not happening.
Maryland was the first ones to enact red flag laws like 2 years ago. And they had a old guy, the VA had said like he needed to have his weapons taken away or something.
Yeah.
And a bunch of people showed up at his house and made like a blocking position around his house.
Yeah.
And were like, it was community people, but they were like, you're not coming to this guy's house. And the cops left. And they brought a whole team with them. They literally were like, no, we're not fucking
but
doing
that,
this.
But that, see, that kind of show of force is all that's needed because that causes that gap, right? That tactical pause, as we call it, right? It
that
causes
gives that you tactical a moment pause to reevaluate what
where
the
fuck's now the
happening.
Cops look at it right. And go like, okay, hold on a second. The situation has changed. Let's reevaluate the change. Do we really want to be here? Do we really want to be doing this?
We really want to mow down half this community to take some old dude's gun.
But if they weren't there and they just went to his door and stacked up and fucking kicked in the door or whatever, that's a totally different problem, right? Because now they're in action. But if you force someone to take that kind of, you know, tactical pause and hold on a second, let's reevaluate that listening stop, right? Where they kind of stop for a second, go, hold on, let's reevaluate, make sure we're in the right place, doing the right things for the right people here.
Yep.
Again, it's not that I think that all these cops are going to go out and these are bad people. I don't think that. And if you do think that, you're a fucking simple-minded idiot.
Yeah.
All right? That's just ridiculous. When they're being fed bullshit, all of us in this room have been fed bullshit, right? And when you're being fed bullshit and you go out to do your job, you don't always know exactly 100% what that job is actually entailing. You don't see the big picture, right? You've got the 100-foot overview. Someone above you has that 30,000-foot overview.
You don't even have the 100-foot. You've got the 10-foot.
Yeah, 10-foot overview. It's like me and these four guys know what we're fucking doing
that's
here.
That's all that's you it. Know.
We know we're supposed to do this thing right here and then leave. We have no idea how that little piece of the puzzle fits in with the rest of the puzzle. And you're never going to know. You're never going to know the impact that that thing had. You're just there to do the job, and that's a thing that people don't understand. So again, when I say like, "Oh, National Guard are going to show up," yeah, they're going to stand up. They're going to do their job, right? Your active mill guys are going to do their job. Your PSD guys are going to do their job. Your cops are going to do their job, unless you can give them a cause to not do it. And I'm not talking about violent insurrection here. What I am talking about is we got to show up in force. To protect, we can't just say, well, that's Virginia. Hey, Virginia should have fucking handled their own shit. That's just California.
Whatever,
you don't like California, move. No way, dude.
Texas
that's
is
one
next.
Of our 50 states, bro.
Texas is fucking next. Wait.
Yeah.
Just wait.
And that's one of our states. That's one of our states mm-hmm. in our country. Those are our countrymen. Whether we believe on, whether we agree on gay marriage and abortion and smoking weed or not is irrelevant. These are our countrymen. And goddamn it, if anyone's going to fuck them up, it's going to be us. We're not going to let our freaking governing authorities that we elected to properly represent us fuck up our countrymen because they don't like the fact that they're enacting their own personal liberty. But why can't we do it? I'll tell you why. Because when I was doing freaking, part of the reason I don't do work at all anymore for veteran nonprofits, when the VA scandal was going on here, right? And guys were driving down and killing themselves in the freaking VA parking lot. And it was horrible. There's people were getting freaking diseases, getting treated by the staff there. Guys were getting hepatitis and all kinds of crazy shit. They weren't taking care of people. There was like the legitimate freaking death lists that got exposed. Like, holy shit. We're talking scandal. They should have had people down there in droves. And I was working with a nonprofit organization. We tried to organize an event to get guys down there to support other veterans as they went in, basically be like almost like an escort so that you made sure that this guy got treated properly because maybe he wasn't firing on all cylinders and he needed some help. He might have been physically sick, might have been disabled, might have been mentally upset or mentally sick. And we were going to send down healthy, functional escorts, no crazy fucking bro grunt style t-shirt wearing dudes, but like normal fucking dudes who had integrated back into society. Right?
And effectively.
And could take these guys down to the VA and help them through the process. You know how many dudes said they would show up? 15. You know how many dudes showed up?
Like one.
Four.
Yeah. Jesus, really?
That's why we can't go to Virginia. Because everyone's life is still too good. The alternative is still not bad enough. We know what's on the horizon, but most people are like, I'll probably be fucking dead by then. So just fuck your kids then? Is that what George Washington said?
Yeah, right.
Fuck future generations. I'll probably be dead
by
then.
But it goes back to what you said earlier. You got to take care of your family.
You do, but to an extent, taking care of my family means securing their future, not just paying their bills today.
If you live in Virginia.
But, again, the lights still come on.
But the lights still come on, and the toilet's still flush. And there's still food on the shelves, and even though I'm being taxed on every fucking thing in my life, including my taxes, by the way, being taxed on literally everything that's happening, and they're taking the majority of my income, and they're taking the majority of my liberty, and they're controlling the majority of what we are, everyone still runs around thinking we're free because they have Wi-Fi free-ish. And they can watch whatever show they want, and they can currently go to whatever church they want, but trust me, that will change.
You're not in a free country when you're 5% of the world's population, but you're 25% of the world's prison population.
Yeah, that's not
a
free country.
We literally have a quarter of the world's prison population in our country locked away.
Oh, yeah.
It's because we put people in jail for really stupid.
For like smoking a fucking joint or something.
For victimless crimes. And again, we still allow that to happen. Why do we allow it to happen? Because the alternative isn't worse yet. Why aren't we in a car right now headed to your home? One of our other instructors is from Virginia as well. Why aren't we headed to his home, right? Why aren't we headed home, Smith?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because the guard hadn't been called in yet.
Because we haven't done anything. It's the alternative still. Dude, it's Christmas. I got to be here with my kids. I got to do Christmas shopping.
I got family coming to town.
You know what I mean? I got several classes on the schedule.
Yeah.
Can't just roll out of here, right? The alternative is not yet worse.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it takes that. It takes the alternative being worse where you're literally holy shit, this is literally worse. It would be better if we died fighting in the streets than continue to live like this.
James, most of the rest of the staff in MS training still have too much to lose.
Exactly.
Right?
That's my point.
Because let's say we pack our shit and we go to Virginia. Let's say we're involved in an altercation in Virginia. Let's say we survive said altercation, but we still end up in jail or handcuffs or whatever happens, right? Well, now our lives as we know them are fucking over.
And we're so far from home, none of our family is going to be able to visit us in prison.
Like we have lost everything.
Yeah.
And we can't afford to do that. Yet. Right? Because it's not happening in Arizona.
We can't afford it because we're equating the cost to money.
No, I'm equating it to being at home with my wife and my kids to protect my wife and my kids if this same bullshit comes to Arizona.
Okay. So you're talking about time and protection over
money. We can't afford it.
We can't afford losing Virginia. We cannot afford a Democratic House that impeaches our president over false charges, a lawfully elected president over false charges with no actual evidence.
That have been in the process for 4 years. It's been one fucking thing after another.
We can't afford that. We can't afford allowing those people to continue doing their quote-unquote jobs as elected
officials. Vote them the fuck out.
How many people?
Everybody's
work.
Everybody's fucking seat is up in like 2020.
How many?
The 2020 elections are fucking huge.
Voting doesn't work, man.
How many?
Putting toast in the broken toaster does not create good toast.
How many people voted for Trump?
Fucking voting him out.
65 million people in America, something like that. Yeah, yeah.
You keep voting him out until the right fucking one is voted in. Until the right people
fix the toaster. But here's the thing. More bread in the toaster.
That's what I'm getting at. The people fix the fucking system from the inside. You can't fix it from the outside.
Well, I know
you
that.
You can't.
I know that.
But you have to
vote people out.
Yeah, and I got too many skeletons in my fucking closet to be a senator. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't, I can't change shit.
Like, well, why don't you guys run for office? And I'm like, yeah.
No, I can't do it. Can't do it.
My skeleton, all my hatches are buried with a handle sticking up.
Private James was not a good human being. Let's put it that way. Private Booth was a terrible individual.
That's why we vote every 2 years, every four years.
But it doesn't work, man. The process of voting is not effective because who are we getting?
Then we're still getting shitty people, but that's why you keep voting them out every fucking cycle. Every
I think you go the way of France, and this may be the first time I've ever said this. All right.
Hopefully,
and you build some guillotines in the street.
You guys want to keep
fucking around? We will chop your goddamn heads off.
There you go.
We will drag you out from your seats.
Then
we will
go the way of Hong Kong.
Out of your go the way of Hong Kong. We're done with this.
7 million people fucking riding in the
streets. We are done with this. And then when those cops, those military guys, whoever it is, actually show up to defend against that, now you know whose side they're on. Because that's too big of a thing for them to say, well, it's just my job. Like, nope. Anyone who's like a true, holy shit, this isn't right, is not going to be there. And then everyone who is there, now you know who they work for mm-hmm. real, who they really fucking work for. Now you know what side they're on when it's that scale of an event.
Yeah,
for sure. Basically an insurrection, which is essentially damn near what Hong Kong's got going on.
Yeah, for sure.
That's exactly what they've got going on.
You know, when you've got them gluing cinder blocks to the freaking roadway to prevent people from driving down the roads, that's a pretty serious problem you've got on your hands.
When they're literally using bow and arrows to defend their internet connection so the fucking government can't spy on them further.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a problem. You're using bows and fucking arrows, and cops are openly shooting people in the street with live rounds, like, in the fucking face.
Mm-hmm. And that's literally the road. We are on that road to that destination.
Destined for that.
That is where we're headed.
Yeah.
And we can look around the world and we can read the history books and we can see that this continually happens over and over and over again.
And honestly, I think fucking California and places like New Jersey, New York were a testing ground.
100%.
For
gun. They want to see how far they can get.
Yep.
How far can we push people and they'll still comply?
A little bit at a time.
How far can we continue to push people a little bit at a time, just a little bit at a time?
A little bit further.
Oh, it's just this. Oh, they just want that.
I mean, I don't really need a 15-round magazine. 10 rounds is enough.
It started out with no automatic weapons in the 80s.
Well, it actually started in 1934.
30s. Yeah, 1934.
That was when the NFA, National Firearms Act, got passed in 1934. In the 80s, in 86, is when they...
Rewrote it
so that you couldn't manufacture any more. So now that's why pre-86...
are only transferable.
Items, there's only so many, and they're only transferable. Now, to manufacture something new, you have to be a manufacturer, and to be in possession of anything new, you can only get the transferable stuff if you're like a normal, class 3 guy, like any of us. But if you're an FFL, class FFL, 7, now you can now you can have that capability to take what's called a post sample and utilize it for your own personal use.
So where do I get an automatic Mac-10? What the fuck?
Well, here pretty soon, probably from the streets, but...
Yeah. Get it where I get everything else. In the streets.
In the streets.
In the hard streets.
All right. So there's our off-topic rant that took 30 minutes.
40.
40 minutes.
Whatever.
So basically... How we
feel about it, man.
The toaster is still broken.
But the lights still come on.
Now it's here's the same thing, though. In that vein, though, we can go to our topic, but before we do, Red Wire Gear Moment.
So we already kind of covered it a little bit, but Merry Christmas. Enjoy your time with your family, your friends. Be mindful the next couple of weeks. The holidays are difficult for a lot of people for a lot of different reasons. Be mindful of those in the military that are not able to spend time at home with their family. Have fun and be safe. Don't fuck kill yourself. If you're having a tough time over the holidays, you know how to reach me. Email, phone call, whatever. I'll be there to talk. So that's what I got for you guys this week. Merry Christmas.
All right. Red Bar Gear Moment brought to you by Red Bar Gear. Com. All right, topic, which we're only going to spend about 20 minutes on, is
Jesus.
Is removing variables and the risk reality matrix, which is actually perfectly in line with what we've just been talking about. Mm-hmm. When we talk about removing variables, to us, everything we do in training is removing variables, right? So that means if you're going to come take a handgun class, as an example, you're going to remove some variables. You're going to remove some equipment variables, such as, does this handgun work for me? Is this the right handgun? Is this the right holster? Do I have enough magazines? The magazines work properly. Am I shooting good ammunition? Is the ammunition functioning properly? You're going to remove those kinds of variables, right? Equipment-related stuff.
Yeah.
You're going to remove mental variables, right? Am I capable of doing this? What's my performance capability? You know, how far can I really push myself? Do I have the appropriate mindset to engage in these types of environments? We see people who are damn good shooters. We put them in force-on-force. They just get wrecked, right? Why does that happen? Because we put them under a little bit of stress. I had a shooter last weekend at a class who was a phenomenal shooter, static, but killing it. I mean, amazing. Like, literally, I was like, I have very little feedback for you, dude. Like, you're doing a great job. And then we started moving into some other things, moving, low light, no light, using light. I mean, literally came apart, like, missing targets came apart. Oof. Like, completely missing 100% came apart because he couldn't see his sights, his light application was shit, he doesn't really do a lot of moving and shooting, stuff like that. It's like, all of a sudden, he was like, whoa, this is a problem, mm-hmm. right? And that's good. That's where we want to find that problem is in training. Mm-hmm. But he was like, oh my gosh, there's a problem. Great. Now he knows what the problem is. So now we go back into that and that training environment, and now he knows what variables he needs to work on so he can remove those things, right? Mm-hmm. Now, so that's always what we're doing. Like, that's the mentality part of things. Then we're looking at, like, knowledge variables. Like, what's my knowledge base in certain things? We just did invasive trauma interventions this last weekend. And invasive trauma interventions is an interesting class for us because we get a lot of shit for it. You know, a lot of paramedics and stuff like that give us a lot of shit. Doctors, whatever, because, you know, we're teaching invasive concepts. And, oh, people don't need to know that. Yeah, they do. They absolutely do. Even if they don't totally know and can perform the technique or the concept under pressure, they need to know that it exists. They need to know what the next step is so that they know what to prepare their patient or someone that they're trying to help for, mm-hmm. right? So that they know what symptoms to look for. If I know that, even if I seal up a chest wound, building and maintaining pressure can still lead to tension pneumothorax, and yeah. then someone might have to get needled, fingered, or freaking chest thoracostomied. Like, if one of those things may have to happen, well, then it's really important that I look for very specific symptoms and signs that are going to be able to tell, so I can tell a higher level of care, hey, maybe I don't have a needle, maybe I'm not willing to poke this guy's chest with my freaking finger, maybe I don't right. have a chest tube capability, but when a higher level shows up and I already know about these concepts, I can say, hey, I know that this is building, right? You need to look at this specifically now. It's a problem. And they're going to do their own assessment anyway, but I don't want them to miss anything as an imperfect human being, which all people are, right? So it's like, even if I don't necessarily perform those concepts, I now know what I need to look for, right? So that's removing variables. Right. Some people are going to buy those tools, and they're going to buy a Krait kit, and they're going to carry it around with them, and they're going to practice that skill, and that's awesome. Other people got exposed to it in class. They're probably never, ever going to buy a Krait kit. They're never going to carry it around with them, but now they know what the next step is. Now they have a better understanding. They've removed that variable mm-hmm. if they're interested in, you know, emergency trauma to begin with. So it's like removing variables is what we do in training. And we remove all the variables that we can. I'll give you an example I gave in class the other day. My house has motion lights, mm-hmm. fully lit outside, mm-hmm. security doors, mm-hmm. blocked windows, mm-hmm. Camera system, clear cut all the way around. It's pretty hard for someone to hide against the house or anything like that. In a good neighborhood. Pretty low crime area, two giant dogs. If I wake up tonight and there's somebody attempting to break through multiple layers of that, there is no doubt in my mind what their intentions are.
Right.
Oh, because yeah. I have set up enough things, removing that necessity for me to process information under stress. If I wake up and someone's already in my house and they've gone through the process of getting through each one of those systems, my dogs start barking and I wake up and God forbid, I don't know, someone shoots my dog or something like that as they're coming in the house. Like, I now know 100% the intentions of this person. I don't have to think. I'm not like, well, gee, does Castle Doctrine apply? I'm going to do what I have to do to stay alive.
Yep.
I know what they're here for because I've already removed those variables. The more variables we remove, the less decisions we have to make. Mm-hmm. So if you're the kind of person like leaves your doors unlocked, you know, doesn't turn your outside lights on, whatever, and then some shithead like random tweaker dude breaks into your house because it's really easy, it's like, well, dude.
You kind of had it coming.
And now when they're standing in the freaking house, you have to go through that process of like, have to process. Oh, shit. Do I actually have to shoot this person? You know? Yeah. Or not. Or can I just tell them to get the hell out of here and they're going to run away and then I don't have to kill anybody? Like, now I have variables there. You know, I have some cameras that are related to an app that you can get on your phone that shows you other things that are happening. If someone chooses to post something up on this app, you can see other things that are happening in your neighborhood. You can set out your circle of whatever, out to miles, right? So mine's set out pretty far, and I like to see what's going on in the area. And it's interesting because a lot of people call it, someone broke into my car last night. Here's the video. And you're like, bro, they walked up and opened the door, man. So the fun thing is you get a post as a random user. So I'm constantly trolling people. It's like my constant thing. I'm like, your car was unlocked. It's not called breaking in. Your car was unlocked. And I've had people be like, I should be able to leave my car unlocked with a gold bar on the fucking dashboard. No one should take it. That's right. And if all people were Jesus Christ, that wouldn't be a problem. But since Jesus Christ is not on the planet right now and no one here is like him, then just assume that if you left a gold bar on your car and your door unlocked, it would be stolen. Just assume that.
Locks keep honest people honest.
What's interesting is it's all a lock. Yeah. So what's in your car? People leave their garage clickers in their car. They leave personal information in their car. They leave all these things in their car. And then they don't lock their car. They forget to lock their car. It's like make it a habitual to lock your car and double check and make sure it's locked, make sure it's secure. If you don't, something happens. Well, you didn't remove that variable. Thus, it's kind of your fault.
Yeah.
Like if you're not actively seeking to remove variables and then something happens, it's kind of your fault. So you do everything you can to remove all these variables because now I know if I catch someone trying to break into my vehicle that's locked and secured and alarmed and all that kind of stuff, I know what they're here for. They have to actively go through multiple systems to get inside. They're not just walking up and open the door. So it's like I've removed all these variables even of that process. I know that the majority of our instructors are probably never going to be assaulted in public.
No.
By sober people.
No.
Because we none of us, small, big, or whatever, doesn't matter, look specifically like the kind of person that you probably want to spend a lot of time fucking with. Now, that doesn't mean that real bad guys, criminals aren't going to fuck with you just because you look a certain way. Don't think that that exists because they will if you have what they want. Yep. Right? But even encountering that level of high violent criminal is a low chance. So it's like we are now taking chances out of chances out of chances until, again, because we've removed all these variables out of who's going to approach us, you know, hostily.
Right.
It helps us to not have to go through the mucking or managing unknown contact process quite as deeply because we're like, hey, man, if someone approaches me when I have my kids, again, I look even less like the kind of guy you want to approach when I have my kids. I become incredibly – when I'm walking with them in public, I look like I'm looking for someone to kill. That is exactly how I look. Yeah. It's a very specific and very intentional look. And thus – people don't approach me. Salespeople don't approach me. The crazy people don't approach me. Fucking panhandlers don't approach me. The petition people don't approach me. I mean, no shit. I have seen for years people look at me and look away. I'm not a big intimidating guy at all. But it is the vibe that I put out when I am holding my kids' hands crossing the street.
It's your resting bitch face.
It's
resting
asshole. If you come over here. Yeah.
Resting asshole.
Yeah.
Because I got it hard, dude.
It's like if you come over here, it's not going to end well for you, regardless of what you have to offer.
It's not worth your time, energy, and effort. At the very least, I'm probably going to be a dick.
Exactly. Yeah. No matter what happens,
you're going to get your fucking.
You're not going to like this.
Yeah.
And so, because of that, now if someone does approach me, now I've already removed several steps out of the process of dealing with them. So now, if someone approaches me while I'm with my kids and my particular fucking look is going on and they approach me and they're like, excuse me. I'm like, get the fuck out of here, man. And they're like, what? Oh. And people are like, well, what if you hurt their feelings? And I'm like, I don't give a shit because I've already removed the variables that anyone who's sensitive snowflake style should have already picked up on my, I don't give a fuck what you have to say in the first place vibe. And so because of that, anyone who's approaching me at this point is a shit bag. Unless they're asking me for a true, oh my God, emergency, which you can deduce pretty fucking fast, then I don't care what they have to say next. I will shut people down as soon as they make eye contact with me. I do not care, right? Because I've removed the variables beforehand that allow people to casually and friendly approach me. I don't want to be approached in public. Now, if you're the person who does and you walk around, that's fine. But understand the variables that you're putting out there and inviting people to approach you.
I'm a pretty inviting guy. I'm a pretty nice guy. I'm friendly. It's just the way I was raised. But I'm also pretty good at judging the situation, what's going on around me, right? Like, I don't get approached at gas stations.
Right? I hate that when people walk up to
people do not approach me at gas stations because there's very specific things I do at gas stations to prevent from being fucking approached, right? One of them is not leaning into my fucking car, digging around, not paying attention to what is going on.
Head on a swivel at a gas station.
But, like, let's say I'm at Walmart and they have these salespeople in Walmart. I'll say 50% of the time try to say something to me. And I'm like, oh, no, thanks, not interested. And I'll just keep, I don't slow down. I don't skip a beat. I look at them. I make eye contact. I'm like, hey, no, thanks. Have a nice day.
Yeah.
And I just keep fucking moving. And they're, you know, and I've had a couple of them. But and I'm like, no. I said, no, I'm not interested in what you're selling. Right.
By that point, I'm already gone.
Well, I actually had a dude try to block me. And I'm like, dude, I'm not interested. Get out of my way.
Yeah.
Like, this is not – and that's all I said, and I said it in such a manner that he understood that this was not going to fucking end well for him.
Yeah.
But I'm a fairly nice guy, you know, and Glenn gives me shit about it just because of the way I am and the times that we've been out. I get people bum cigarettes off of me out in the, you know, and I'm okay with it because I'm usually able to judge exactly what the fuck's happening pretty quickly. And I know that if I misjudge it, I'm capable of handling what may happen. Because being able to pick out someone that's benign and malignant is fairly easy most of the time in most social interactions.
But yeah, I don't work out for this reason, and I don't shave my head for this reason. I shave my head because I'm fucking bald. But being bigger and bald and tattooed is great when you have resting asshole face. Nobody wants to fucking talk to me. It's incredible how salespeople do not say, hey, do you have a minute? Salespeople don't look at me.
Like, right.
When I walk through the mall or Walmart or something, I don't go to Walmart. But if I walk through the mall,
I love going to Walmart.
I fucking hate
my favorite
Walmart.
Place in the world. It's like fucking Disneyland for special people.
I will literally go to Target to avoid Walmart people. I know that sounds terrible, but
Target people are just different.
There's nobody in my Target. That's why I go there. It's great. There's never anybody in there.
Well, when you think about it, like now from looking at risk reality matrix, we talked about removing variables. So now let's look at this matrix thing that exists, right? It's a process we use. We teach a program called MAST, Mindset Awareness, Safety, and Training.
Mm-hmm.
That is our...
It's like a corporate safety program.
Well, it's our overall all-encompassing emergency response program. So when a company asks us, hey, come in and do active shooter training, my response is always, hey, look, man, the chance an active shooter is going to come into your building is incredibly low, and even more so if you prepare to remove all the variables that would enable an active shooter to even have access to your building or to want to shoot the place up in the first place.
Right.
Right? It's like, this is how we sell it to people when they ask me, because they're like, no, we don't sell, we don't do an active shooter program. I'm like, oh, well, so-and-so company does. I'm like, well, so-and-so company wants your fucking money. What I want to teach you how to do is how to avoid vehicle accidents, not how to handle vehicle accidents when they happen, which is how most training goes.
Yeah, it's,
right?
It's
most
literally
firearms training is like,
reaction.
Now that you've had an accident, let's talk about how to pull over safely to the side of the road or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Instead, I'm like, here's a thought. Don't get in accidents. Let's talk about how to avoid those things, right? Mm-hmm. Things, active steps you can take to remove variables that prevent you from doing those kinds of things, right? And sometimes, no matter what you do, accidents are still going to happen to you. And that happens.
Shit happens.
But you'll notice people who have removed more and more and more variables tend to get in less accidents. So it's
and
like
when they do happen, or let's not even say accidents, let's say emergencies.
Okay.
And when these emergencies do happen, we're able to handle them better.
Better, yeah. More
prepared. It's easier. It's a minor inconvenience, not a life-changing emergency.
Right, exactly. It's like, well, I'm already kind of prepared for this situation. Let's roll with this, right? So it's like, yeah, I've got the freaking roadside assistance. I've got the rental car reimbursement for my truck on my insurance, like blah, 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 blah. I've got all that stuff already in play.
Yep.
Because if it happens, I'm already set. I've got my little go bag in my truck so I can just grab all the shit I need out of my truck if it's got to get towed. I've got two backpacks that I keep in my truck. Mm-hmm. One of them's got my go-to shit, like just normal daily stuff I use, and then the other one's just an empty backpack. So if my truck's got to get towed,
I can
grab all the stuff all that I absolutely shit. Have to have out of my truck,
yeah.
And some of it I use a lot, but I may not carry it in my other bag, and I can throw it all in there, and now with two backpacks, boom, I'm in the freaking tow truck, or I'm in my rental car, or I'm in, you know, the roadside assistance or whatever, like, I'm ready to freaking go.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm ready. Okay, cool. I'll see you later, truck. You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of variables that we've removed. Like, boom, I got flares and strobes and everything else to my truck. I got a VF-17 panel. Like, I've got everything I need so I don't get killed while I'm on the side of the road or wrecked on the side of the road, smashed into again, because we've removed all those variables. That's what the MAST program does. If it does happen, yeah, we're going to show you how to do that. But even better is we're going to show you how to prepare your people so that they put certain things in place that prevent this from happening in the first place, mm-hmm. right?
And lessen the impact if it does happen.
And some of it's really simple stuff that we'll teach people. But my point is that one of the first things that we do when we get into this program is we teach people about the risk reality matrix.
Right.
And the risk reality matrix is essentially like a line graph. On one side, you guys can imagine this in your head. On one side on the left, you have risk.
Mm-hmm.
On the bottom side, moving to the right, you have reality. And now what we do is we just do a group event with everybody where we go, all right, guys, start listing emergencies you might encounter. And everyone starts listing everything. And there's eventually like civil unrest or zombies or something silly like that. And then there'll be people who are like, my flat tire, or I spilled my coffee in my lap, or, I can't communicate with my kid, right? And so we start putting all these emergencies. I usually get to about 15 or 20 and I go, okay, that's enough to work with. Now let's put them here on the matrix, all right? So I start drawing dots. Right? Okay, the risk of this is, risk of zombies is a 10. Out of 10, it's a 10. It's a pretty serious problem.
Yeah.
We've seen the movies, okay? But what's the reality of zombies? A 0, right. All right? Maybe a 1. I'll give it to you sci-fi folks. It's a 1, all right?
Yeah.
So I put it way down at 0 or 1 for reality, but all the way at 10 for risk. So mm-hmm. that, because it's such a high risk, is often what people end up preparing for. That's a regular thing. But now we go like, all right, flat tire. All right, cool. So what's the reality of flat tire? All right, everyone in here who's ever been attacked by a zombie, raise your hand. All right, everyone in here who's ever had a flat tire, raise your hand. Okay, so there's a lot of you. Okay, cool. So if out of 10, let's say we have 20 students, at least 10 of them are going to raise their hand.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reality of this? Well, it's at least 50%. So let's put this up at around a 5 or a 6. Now, what's the risk? All right, what's the real risk of a flat tire? Like,
late for something.
Can they cause traumatic accidents? Yeah, but most of the time.
But that's not just going to be a flat. You're looking at like a blowout, right? Yeah.
And so it's like a flat tire is like an inconvenience at best. It might make you late for something really, really important. Let's put it at like a 3 or a 4.
Yeah.
All right? So the reality here is like a 5 or a 6. The risk is like a 3 or a 4. Okay. Just starting with those two points, which one do you think is more important to prepare for? Zombies or flat tires? Well, people are, of course, going to go like, well, I guess in reality, flat tires. You're like, okay.
Aha.
So now, let's talk about how we prepare for flat tires. Okay, first, how do we prevent flat tires? All right, let's go down that list. Mm-hmm. Okay, now that we've done that, how do we prepare for flat tires? Okay, let's go down that list. All right, so now we are better prepared for flat tires because it's a greater reality, but how many of you guys in here have done all the things on this list? We just all agreed that a flat tire was a reality and a risk. And how many of you guys have done everything on this list? Fuck active shooters. How many of you are prepared for a flat tire tomorrow? Because the more it turns out, then we do that going down the whole list, right? We go down the whole list of realistic stuff and we put it up on this matrix and then people start looking and they're like, wow. And then we take it and we prioritize everything, right? And then of course zombies ends up, you know, at the bottom of the list. And it's like, now we're here and now we prioritized everything and now people are like, wow. I'm not as prepared as I thought I was.
The further you go down it, it basically inverts itself.
It does. It really does. And what's interesting about it, though, is that when you start to look down the process, and this is, again, the process we take people through in the classroom, is you go, okay, now, guys, imagine if you were prepared for a flat tire, a power outage, a water shortage, a food shortage, being assaulted. If you were prepared for I don't know, you know, you can't communicate with your kids. If you were prepared for, you know, a grid going down or your Wi-Fi going out or a financial hardship or a job loss. I mean, imagine if you were prepared for all those emergencies, okay? Like effectively, not 100% because no one's perfect, but you were effectively prepared for that. How do you think you'd be in an active shooter situation?
Probably turn out pretty well.
Pretty fucking useful, I'd say.
Yeah.
Right? You'd probably be super useful if you were prepared for all that stuff, even if you didn't know anything about active shooters. If you were that prepared, if you had that much forethought, guys, I don't even need to teach you about active shooters. If you're here, you're already thinking about it. You're already studying it. You're already preparing for it. Mm-hmm. You're already getting ready for it. You don't need me in here to tell you what to do. Now, I can give you some tactics, certainly. I can give you some statistics and some facts about the most common times of the day, the most common reasons that it happens, the most common firearm you're going to be up against. I can give you those kind of statistics. But beyond that, me telling you that it's most likely going to happen, you know, first thing in the morning at lunchtime or sometimes at closing time, but really first thing in the morning and lunchtime is the most common times it happens. And it's probably going to be a handgun, and it's probably going to be either a former employee or someone who knows an employee. Like, knowing that information can help you set up certain safeguards against those kinds of things. However, if you are handling those types of problems more efficiently, you're not going to have to worry about active shooters coming in. If you set up a good security station, if you've set up certain policies if someone gets let go, if you've set up certain ways that you handle interpersonal conflicts inside the office or inside your company, if you already have SOPs for all that stuff and you stick to them and everyone's treated the same, right? Like you were talking about the death penalty, it's an equitable thing. It's a swift but equitable. If you've already handled all that, dude, active shooters, it's a freaking shoe-in, man. You're talking about 0.02% of 0.06% of all the accidental deaths in America, average, are active shooters. And that includes all MCIs, meaning not necessarily like active public shooters, but someone who might just murder more than two people.
Yeah, in the same shooting.
In the same shooting.
Yeah.
Right? In the same incident, as it's called, right? So it's like, dude, the risk reality matrix is an important thing. Removing the variables, once you establish within the risk reality matrix what's actually realistic for you, it may not be as sexy to prepare for. It might not need body armor. It might not need a badass med kit. It might not need the latest and greatest gun. It might need you literally going home and cycling out your water supply or flushing your water heater to make sure you don't have a bunch of buildup in it. I mean, I don't know about you, but if the water heater goes out my house, that's a fucking emergency.
It is a literal emergency.
You know what I mean?
It's an inconvenience.
I don't take cold showers.
Yeah. Well, it's not an emergency now because you know how to handle it.
Yeah.
Right? And if I needed to replace the water heater, which, by the way, is not that freaking hard to do, you can do it yourself, right? If you have the right tools, because it is going to take some appropriate tools.
It's not fucking complicated.
But it's going to take a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of tools. How many people do you know that even tell you how many gallons their water heater is at their house? Not many, right?
Right.
But is that an important piece of knowledge? You bet. You bet it's an important piece of knowledge. So, it also tells me how much water storage, by the way, it is a giant freaking water storage.
Here's one that could have been, and has in my life in the past, has been a major emergency. My washing machine broke again.
Yeah.
About a week and a half ago.
That's a serious incident.
I could not do laundry for a week.
Ooh.
Right? Now, unfortunately, it happened at a time where I was going to be gone for a few days. My wife was going to be doing some other stuff with our children for a few days. We didn't need to do laundry right then, right? But laundry piled up pretty quick with four people and two kids under the age of 10. Laundry piles up pretty quick in my fucking house.
Yeah.
As I'm sure you're well aware of.
Indeed.
You know.
Indeed.
You know, a lot of people make a lot of laundry. Now, this is the second time this washing machine is broke. I'm a pretty smart guy. I take the washing machine lid off, and I'm looking at it, and I'm trying to figure out where this leak is coming from. I'm like, okay, I can't actually find this now. So I hook up the water supply again. I turn it on, and I'm like, okay, boom. This is the part that's broken, right? Stupid water control valve, right, on the inlet. Fucking retarded. Stress fracture in the bottom of it. I'm like, okay, cool. That's the part that's leaking. I clean up my mess, put the washing machine back together, slide it back, get on my computer, part. 2-day shipping, done. Fixed my washing machine. Took me all of 20 minutes, right? And $50. The part cost me $50, and 20 of that was shipping because I wanted expedited shipping.
You wanted it done quick.
Yeah, I wanted it done quick. So, a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of tools, and I was able to basically save myself about $800 by not having to buy a washing machine. Mm. Now, that being said, there was the discussion that if this particular machine breaks again, I'm replacing it.
Right.
Because I'm tired of
fixing this particular machine.
But that could have been a major emergency for some people.
Yeah.
You know? Because there's not knowledge, and we had a backup plan. I could always take stuff to my in-laws' house and do laundry. You know, their stuff works great.
There are laundry places that'll.
There's laundromats.
Yeah,
right?
Laundromats. Laundry services.
Laundry services.
You can hand wash clothes. You know what's interesting about hand washing clothes? In the backpacking world, you know, it's amazing to me how many people I meet who don't know how to hand wash their clothes.
It's real easy. You get a dry bag, a little bit of soap, a little bit of water, put it in the dry bag, you go, and shake shit out of it.
Yeah, but see, I like to grind them too. I like to grind them up. Like find some rocks in a stream or something, you know, I want to get shit out of the fibers, you know?
Yeah, well, and it depends on the level of dirt. Also depends on
fibers too. But yeah, again, it depends on how dirty it is. But my point is, like, that's a backup plan too.
And a real easy way to just to keep stuff from stinking in that environment? Mm-hmm. Strapped to the outside of your backpack while you're hiking.
Sun dry.
Let it air out.
Yeah.
Air dry.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Weird.
So there's kind of our show on mostly removing or a little bit of removing variables and risk reality measures, and a whole lot more about how the toaster's broken.
It comes around about once a year.
Which, by the way, if you're a patron and you haven't received your toaster's broken sticker, make sure you send us an email, info@trainingaz.com. We've still got a handful of them
left. It's like the best worst sticker I've ever seen in my life.
It is an amazing sticker, man. I love it.
I love it.
I love it. And one of our, of course, amazing patrons and phenomenal listeners and great students of independence training did it for us and drew it for us, which is a great artwork, man. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, if you're a patron and you don't have the toaster's broken sticker, please make sure you hit us up because we'd love to get you one. All right, I think that's it. We're out of time. We're over time, as usual.
So it happens.
Remember, you can bring us out to train with you, get hosting information via email, info@trainingaz.com. And, you know, send us a message if you think, well, like, if you disagree with what we're doing, we love getting messages from people who are like, I think you guys are kind of off base. We don't get it enough. Mostly people just say, we love your show, which tells me, I guess, we're doing something right. But yeah, if you guys, you know, have something to say, you have a show request, you want us to talk more about something particular or whatever, that's how we build our shows, is based on our patrons and our listeners. So make sure that you email us info@trainingaz.com. You can also hit us up on the Arms Room Instagram, and you can hit us up on the Arms Room Facebook page. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as the Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group, so make sure that you guys look at the other shows that are going on there. And we also, I have to apologize twice in the show. This show is supposed to be with Neil talking about his work with the Peshmerga, which we were super excited to do, but then we had to pre-record. So don't worry, guys. If you were excited about that show, January 6th, we're bringing him in. All right, so.
Badass show to start the year with in 2020.
It's going to be our first show. I'm super excited. Neil's a good dude, and he's got a lot of cool information, lessons learned, things like that he's going to share with us about working with the Peshmerga overseas. So don't worry, guys. We are still bringing him in. We couldn't do it this time because that had to be a pre-recorded show. Next week, we're going to have our Rowdy Roundtable.
Sweet.
Last show of the year. We're bringing in our buddy AJ from Overwatch Precision. Mm-hmm. We're bringing in Chris Cook, who's been on our show before, back when he was representing Timney Triggers. Now he does some work with us and also some instruction for some other organizations. And we're bringing in Ted, our comms guy, who's been running some great classes for independence training lately and really, really phenomenal instructor. And, of course, all three of us are going to be talking about lessons learned. So if you want to hear us talk about something specific, make sure that you fire over an email or message to us and say, hey, here's the things I want you guys to talk about. Some of the things we're going to be talking about so far, general kind of life lessons learned, accomplishments in training, accomplishments in competitions, what our business goals are for 2020, and what inspires us. So those are some things that that we're going to be talking about next week. It's going to be a good time.
Awesome.
All right. Until next time, guys, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.